Okay, welcome to the call, everybody. Hopefully we didn't lose anyone this time. It is October 5th today, and you know, it's starting to get chilly at my house. And the nights are kind of cold, and last night in my bed I was shivering, and I thought, oh, somehow I don't have any blankets, and it feels like winter. So, love to see the change in the seasons happening. It inspires hope. You know, the seasons change, and they're always changing a little bit by little bit, which I think is a similitude of how we all are, too. We have different seasons in our lives, and we are always constantly changing, either for the better or for the worse. And hopefully everybody who's part of these calls and on this particular implementation course, I was always trying to be changing for the better like I am, but I love to see how nature is such a great representation of order and the principles of change and growth, and all of those things that are apparent in the garden are also apparent in our lives. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and get started today. We have so many questions, and it is my hope that I get to them all. If for some reason I do not get to all the questions, which is possible, honestly, with how many we have today, I'm going to take them in the order I received them. And I will go through them as far as I can. If we hit 9:30 and I have not answered them all, then I will just start where I left off next week. As we go along, as always, you can ask questions, comment, whatever it is that you feel like would add any understanding or depth to any of the questions on the call. So anyway, without any more said, we will go ahead and get going. I want to share a thought that was sent to me by a Gold member this last week. And I want to, she sent me a beautiful thank you note, and just sharing how much the course has helped her and has changed her, and that she is, you know, just so grateful for it. And you know, I love to hear things like that. When I hear comments like that, it just touches my heart. And you guys just know how to make my day. And I appreciate that, because I do work pretty hard in every spare second I have. There just isn't really a whole lot of downtime for Nicolene Peck, because I truly am purpose-driven, and when I'm not doing family, which is always my top priority, there is always something to do. And so that's where I'm at most days, and I love to get these little notes. They brighten my day. They let me know, oh, it really does matter. I'm so glad. Anyway, but she said a statement at the end of her beautiful little thank you note that said, people spend years attending college and special trainings to be able to be competent in their chosen profession. How much time do we spend studying to be a parent? In my opinion, it is the most important job there is. And she says, I try to think of parenting like my job. I love that. Do you know that that mentality right there is actually one of the things that changed the way that I parented my children and my family forever? And I love that you just found that. Because when I started doing foster care, I called up the Utah Youth Village and I asked them about doing foster care for them. And they said, well, why do you want to do foster care? And I said, well, you know, to really be quite honest, I said, of course I care about the welfare of the children, but the real honest truth is I need a job, and I need to be able to stay home with my kids, and I need to have a job that can help provide for my family. And the lady stopped on the phone, and she said, that is the best answer I've ever heard. And I said, what? It is? I thought it was pretty shallow, you know? And she said, no. She said, I always tell people, she said, well, then you'll do great. And I was like, you just know just because of that? And she said, yeah, you'll do great, because most people that call to do foster care, they just want to do something really kind for somebody else, like for kids. And she said, and that's great that you love kids, but the problem is they want to be nice, but they don't want their whole life to change. And you can't do foster care well without your whole entire life changing. And she said, and if you look at it like it's a job to parent these children, you will be very successful. Every one of the foster parents and treatment parents that parent these kids that look at it like their job and take it that seriously are the most successful ones. The ones that just want to do a nice thing are the ones that fail, because they're not ready to make huge changes in their life in order to accomplish it. They just want to be kind. And I thought, oh. Anyway, so I loved your comment. And I had to share it because I felt like it was a beautiful aha. It was a little walk down memory lane for me that, yeah, you know what? When I first began this new way of parenting for my family, back when my oldest children were babies and I was starting to do foster children, it started because I needed a job and because I wanted to take care of my children and have a job to provide for my family at the same time, while my husband had to go back to school and, you know, everything else. And because I looked at it like a job the entire time, you don't know how many times there would be hard things that would be happening, and I would say, this is my job. I need to make sure and treat it as if it were my job, and I need to not let it burden me, because this is my job. And so you're so right. You know, as a mother or a father, as you're looking at your job as being a parent, and you take it on as seriously as you would your responsibilities at work, then you will be very successful, and it won't drain you as much. That's another really important thing. If you're trying to live your own selfish life, and you have to keep doing this job, it's like wanting to be an at-home mom, but somebody keeps calling you into an office. And it's driving you crazy, because you have all these things that somebody keeps wanting you to do, but you want to be an at-home mom. So if you're trying to have a selfish life and just do the things you want to be able to do, and you're bothered by the kids waking up in the night and by them having needs and all that kind of stuff, then you might have to change your paradigm on what it really means, because otherwise you will always feel burdened, and it won't be a fun journey for you and your family. Okay. Here is our first question. Hi, Nicolene. I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity to contact you regarding my precious son. He is 7, turns 8 in April. He's my oldest of 3 children. I have a son who's 6 and a daughter who's 4. I recently put my son and his younger brother into public school after homeschooling with the Thomas Jefferson model for the past, well, all of their years. I don't know if it is the reason for the problems, but I'm wondering. It has been a big change. My son has become very short-tempered. He bit his younger brother yesterday, which was pretty shocking to me, as he has never done anything like that before. Later that day, we were out bike riding, and he took his brother's horn off his bike and teasingly taunting him would not return it, which in turn caused his younger brother to cry. We have a no-teasing rule, so I told him that he would have to get in the shower and head to bed when we got home. Once home, I asked him to go into the house and get in the shower and get ready for bed. I'm just going to interject right here. I don't know if you really did ask him or if you just phrased it in the question, but if you're going to give instructions, try not to ask the children, like, okay, like, will you please go in the house and, you know, and get ready for bed, or will you please take your dish over If you ask them, it puts you in a passive role as a parent, and it's not really as direct as an instruction. Okay. He complained some and wanted to negotiate, which I turned down and insisted he get in a shower. I was still outside with the other two kids and a neighbor. He went in the house, and when I came in 20 minutes later, he had destroyed the house, pulled the books off the shelf, knocked paper off the counter, taken all the magnets off the refrigerator, unfolded all the laundry I had on the couch, stripped my bed and threw the blankets on the floor, trashed the bathroom. Ah, I couldn't believe it. I became very quiet. I truly am at a loss for what to do with this normally sweet and gentle person. There is more to this issue. He is very physical lately, hitting at the least provocation. I have resorted to laying him over my knee and giving him spankings, which is so hypocritical. This can't be the answer. It is against my every fiber. Please, please help us. Okay. So I've got a few thoughts here, and probably quite a few thoughts, but we'll go ahead and just get going here on this issue. First, you said that he used to be homeschooled, and now he is in public school for his first time. He has entered a completely new social environment. His social environment used to be exclusively the family, and then oftentimes family with a few friends. But family was always the hub of his social environment. His new social environment actually probably has a pecking order, which is a whole new concept for him, probably, because school has a pecking order. There's a line, a chain of command, a line of authority among the peers. And there's also a little bit of oppression. I mean, I don't know if I want to say it in those terms, but a little bit, because he was used to having probably quite a bit of freedom and is now required to sit for very long periods of time. And so there could be a little bit, even if he says he likes it, I mean, there still could be, you know, he could have pent up, you know, anxiety, anger, things like that, just because of this shift in the culture of his day, which is, you know, a big deal. So you said, you know, I'm not sure if that's made any difference. I suggest to you it probably has made a difference, just because every time you make an environmental shift, there's a difference. There's some issues that could be happening here, and without talking to him, I don't really know, but he may be getting mistreated at school, you know. He may be getting bullied a little bit. He's kind of a new kid coming in. Or he could be getting treated like really special, you know, like the new kid, and be getting all of this attention that he never really had before, and so could be making him prideful in one way, or giving him an idea that he's got some sort of dominance. Either way, though, whether he feels incredibly special and a little bit puffed up, or whether he is being bullied, this could both lead to him bullying other people, both of these paradigms on how he views himself, and him wanting to have dominance over other people. So, I mean, really, after all, when a person is 7, or he said he's almost 8 years old, a child is still a product of their social setting. For instance, if a child has a friend who hates pickles, let's say, and talks about it, then a child may also decide not to like pickles without even ever trying them. Or if a child may decide that they really like skateboarding, just because everybody else likes it, even though that child may be actually more inclined or interested in art, really, but they do skateboarding instead because, you know, art's not cool. And, you know, I've seen people do this. I've seen boys be like, oh, volleyball, that's a girl sport. I'm not playing that, you know. Just random strange things. You're a boy and you sing? you know, oh, how lame. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen. I had a foster daughter who on purpose chose to never turn in all of her homework that we did so that she could fail all of her classes, because if she became smart, then she would lose friends because she couldn't be one of the smart kids. There's just all these silly things that they do to try and, you know, be like other people, and they get influenced more than they would ever admit and more than we often realize. So you've got a couple of options with the school issue. Now, that's just a really quick rundown of school. The other thing is, in fact, before we even get to the options, another thought is that the teacher at school is trying to just keep the masses from killing each other, you know, and her, and she's trying to, in a lot of ways, you know, manipulate them to care about the things that she's presenting. And there's a lot of emotional base behind what's happening, you know, at the school, because there's only so many ways you can do crowd control. And depending on how many principals your teacher has, and I don't know if you know or not, and I certainly don't know, but I don't know whether she's using set skill sets to teach the children about how to behave, or whether she is having to work on behavior issues at school too, because usually most teachers, that's a huge part of their job description, just like as a mother, that's a huge part of your job description. And they've got a whole bunch of kids, and they don't have as much power, because more and more and more people take away their power to effectively govern their classrooms. So they're in a little bit of a pickle, you know, and so there could be, you know, situations like that too that are causing, I don't know, different feelings in him, you know, being in that different kind of environment that he hasn't had before. And you've got a couple of options there. You can keep him there and say, well, you know, he'll have to just learn these lessons, and we'll just have to help him figure out the best way to succeed at school, and hopefully he is succeeding at school. And and then mom will have to take more of an active role in his school life and his social life, which means mom would go to the school on a regular basis, observe what's happening, observe the social life of the child, and make sure that you groom them properly socially, and not just allow the school social to take care of the social grooming for you. So many parents make the mistake of allowing society to socially groom their child, assuming that that's the natural and logical way to have it done, and that the child will somehow learn social skills from just being part of other people. They do, but oftentimes they're undesirable. And sometimes they can come out okay. Sometimes the parents can say enough in the off times that it makes a difference. Or sometimes the kids just choose, I'm going to be one of the good ones. I'm going to be a really good kid, and I'm going to learn all these things really well, and I'm going to learn how to communicate with the teacher. Like, sometimes they're just motivated to do that, because, of course, all the teachers are trying to get the kids to be that way. But in many, many cases, parents struggle with these social behaviors of the children, and it really is because the children have not had a whole lot of guidance socially, because they're with friends all day long, and they are pretty much taught how to be social by the friends, and the friends don't have a whole lot more life experience than they do. So it's kind of one of those blind leading the blind sort of things. And anyway, so you would have to take an active role in it, I would think, especially to determine if that's even an issue. So you would want to go and observe and be part of the classroom and watch at recess and, you know, just kind of see what's happening. You've been part of his life for all of this time. You've put all this effort into making sure that he learns appropriate behavior and how to communicate with people effectively, and you would hate for all of that work to be destroyed. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you want to watch for in a social setting. You would hate to have anything happen to his spirit, and you want to make sure that you help point him in the right direction. Hey, you know, I noticed that those kids seem to be a little bit more mean to other kids. I think it would be a good idea if we had a friend change. How do you have a friend change? Let's talk about that. But without you being there, you don't really know, see? And so that's why you have to try to make sure that you're there. Anyway, so you can see the behaviors. I do this all the time. So, of course, I do homeschool, but when we get together with other families or when the children play with people in the neighborhood, I am frequently right there. Not hovering, not like so close that they don't feel like they have any, you know, autonomy, but I am close by. Maybe I've got a book in my hand. Maybe I'm sort of pretending that I'm reading it. Maybe I am reading it and then occasionally I don't. But I'll just kind of like watch what happens or listen to what happens. And sometimes I'll pull my child aside right then and say, you know, hey, Paige, come here. Or London, come here. Okay, I noticed that this is what happened and that you handled it this way. And I want you to know that's not the right way to handle it. The best way is for you to do it like this. And so why don't you go back and try it different? Sometimes I'll do it right in the minute. And I just make it, and it's like that casual. It's like then I go back to my book and they go back to their situation and their social time. And then sometimes I wait until after and I pull them aside and I say, hey, I noticed that this happened and this particular child obviously has an issue with lying. So what are you going to do about it? Because I can see that it upsets you. How are you going to handle the situation with your friend? And then we make a plan for what they're going to do, you know, about their relationship with that friend until the friend can conquer lying, or what they're going to say to maybe help the child decide to conquer the lying or something like that. So, and then when they get older and they start going to church youth groups, things like that, we actually go with them. My husband goes with them. I go with the boys. I go with the girls. And we're just there. We don't, like, meddle or get in the way or try to bug any of the leaders or act like we're spying. We're just there, you know, because we had to bring them and everything. And so we just kind of watch what's happening so that we can help them socially. Because especially at those ages, boy, they get into, I mean, you hit 12, like, there's, like, I mean, really, some of the worst ages to be are 12, 13, and 14. I mean, the social is just, they have to sort through a whole bunch of garbage. And so we want to make sure that we're there for a little while they're sorting through garbage. And then after a while, they go, you know, themselves, but when we feel like they've really got a handle on it. So, because then they come home and tell us everything anyway because they've been used to talking about it with us every time after, you know, they go to youth group. So, anyway, so your one option is keep him there but be really involved. And then the other option would be you could homeschool him again. But even if you homeschool him, at this point, he's had a little bit of a change. He's had a little bit of a paradigm shift. He's had a different set of circumstances that he's been part of, some experiences that he hadn't had before, which can change him. Experiences change people. The BBC kids came to my house for 8 days. In 8 days, they were changed. I mean, like, for life. Like, James, he is now, like, graduating from college this year. He was a dropout, right? He fixed all the relationship with his mom. He quit smoking. I mean, in 8 days. That experiences make a difference in our life. And depending on how dramatic this experience has been for him to go to school, it could have made some lasting changes. So what you're going to want to do, and really every parent should do this anyway, is even if you're homeschooling, make sure that you're involved in the social, that you teach him appropriate social and appropriate sibling relationships so that you're there a lot. Now, either way, he needs to learn to get along with his siblings. He needs to learn cause and effect better. He needs to learn self-government skills. It sounds to me like with his siblings, he's not disagreeing appropriately. It sounds to me like he didn't know to disagree appropriately with you when he earned a consequence to go into the house and to get ready for bed. And so I'm wondering how well he knows that skill. I don't know if that's something that you have worked on with him or not. A lot of parents don't like to encourage that skill, but that skill is one of the most important skills. I mean, they're all, those four basics are all equally important. So being able to disagree in an appropriate way is just as important as being able to accept a no answer or follow instructions when your parents give them. So if you can remember that, oftentimes when I go to houses to meet with people and to teach their families self-government, the hardest thing that the kids have to learn is to disagree appropriately, because they don't want to. They don't want to go to that effort. They don't want to have to be humble and talk about it in a calm way. They want to be able to just walk off after. Either they say okay and be okay and walk off, or they walk off and be passive aggressive. And obviously your son walked off and was passive aggressive, which means he did not agree, or he was anxious. And when he did all of those things to the house, and it probably would have served him really well to have a conversation about it with you. Now, I don't know if you would have been in the right place to have the conversation or not, you know, not being there. It sounds like you were quite shocked by his behavior, because he normally isn't that way. So whether you would have been calm enough for it, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the whole situation was just one of those, like, everybody is out of sorts because you're all a little bit disconnected from each other, where you used to be a little bit more connected to each other, or, you know, or what. I mean, every parent has to, and hopefully this doesn't offend anybody, you all know that I just say things like I really see them, and I know that's why you pay to be on these calls, is because you don't want anyone to beat around the bush. So hopefully this is not offensive, but if your child, I mean, wherever your child is, if they spend a long period of time somewhere, whether it's at school or at friends all the time, or, you know, wherever it happens to be, grandma's, I don't know. Generally speaking, I need someone to press star 6. I hear like a dryer going and a child like, in the background. Anyway, and so, but wherever your child happens to be, generally speaking, it doesn't foster a tighter relationship with family. So the more that you are away from the child, that you're separated, the more you have to battle being disconnected. And so you've got to remember that, that so when they come home from wherever, like if they're at school, friends should not be the first priority. And homework shouldn't even be the first priority. The first priority should be connect back to the family. And then, okay, do the homework. Because, see, the homework is one of those things where it's like they're still disconnected because they still have to do. So even though they're home, they have to think about when they weren't home. And then the parent is saying, okay, do that, do that, do that, do that. And there's this element of stress that's there. And I'm not saying you have to adjust all of your schedule if you do homework first or whatever it happens to be, but do make sure as a parent that you're very aware that that disconnection has already occurred that day, which means that's got to be the top priority, the relationships with the families. If the children then run off to be with friends again, then the disconnection, it becomes more and more severe, more and more permanent. And so, anyway, hopefully that isn't, like I said, offensive. I know that a lot of people have certain schedules, the way they live their lives. But I also think that most people don't often factor in the connection level, because there are different levels of connection that they have with their child. And so you want to make sure that you keep that. If he needs to see family more than he sees other people in order to stay the most connected to family. And so that means, because if he's with friends or whatever mostly, then his life becomes about friends or about self. And it's really hard to battle a selfish child, because you do end up doing that battling instead of, and, you know, I know all my foster kids went to school. I know what it's like. You have to, like, regroup and reconnect every day and try to get them, you know, back invested in what they need to be invested into. Anyway.
Can I ask a question, Nicolene?
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead.
With the school issue, putting them in and then pulling them back out. You know, we've only been in for 4 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
But is pulling them back out, should I wait like till like the holidays or something, so there isn't just like this big, okay, now we're back out again, you know, yanking them around back and forth?
Here's the deal. If you're going to put them back in, then don't pull him out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I think going back and forth is crazy. But honestly, you can learn everything you need to. If you love learning, and if you have a good relationship at home or wherever it happens to be at school, but if you have a really good relationship with whoever it is that is teaching you, and you really love the experience with that person, and you love to learn, then you can learn everything K through 12 in 4 years. He could learn nothing till he was 12. So long as he loved to learn, he'd be fine by the time he was 18. No, by the time he was 16.
I just am still trying to shake the whole family and peer pressure of not doing what the entire world around us is doing, you know.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, that's hard.
It's
killing me. Uh-huh.
I know. And you know, all of us, and I'm not saying that everybody has to homeschool, so just so you know. Hopefully it doesn't come across that way. But I do feel like that oftentimes, I mean, there are a lot of factors that go into school, and so I've brought a whole bunch of those up today that, you know, that oftentimes people don't really consider.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we have all battled that, you know, all of us that homeschool our kids. There is a disease in our culture, and the disease is called sameness disease. And if you're not doing stuff the same, then you either think you're better than everybody else, according to them, or it's like they think you're looking down on them, or you are somehow missing the boat.
I'm totally neglecting my children and their future. That's that I'm getting from my family. I think I am? Where's my education to think that I can educate them, and they're not going to know how to, you know, just the whole who do you think you are type thing.
Now, here's the deal. No matter what you decide, it has to be a matter of prayer.
Yeah,
it really can't be. It can't be a social thing. No matter what you decide. Like, some families go to the Lord. They pray. They truly, truly pray, I want to homeschool my child. Is that the right thing? And they truly could get a no answer. I've known of a person or two who a couple of their kids have gone to school while the rest have been homeschooled because they were homeschooled up to a certain point. But they put them in at a certain point because they really felt like spiritually guided that they needed to do that for that one particular child, you know? And so I think you always have to take it to the Lord. I mean, I don't know if you're a super religious person, but I am. I feel like that, you know, you've got to go and say, hey, this is my choice. Is this the right choice? And then you wait and see if you feel yes or if you feel no. And then at that point, you don't look back. There was probably a reason you chose to homeschool in the beginning. And was that reason something that impressed your heart so much that you felt like it was an extension of you, that you all of a sudden grew some new arm that you were like, hey, I have to do this. I don't even know why, and I have all this persecution, but I have to. Well, if that's the case, hopefully you haven't thrown that aside, because that could have been some sort of a spiritual inclination or, you know, inspiration that you had that you needed to do a certain thing. And so, first and foremost, God gave those children to you. He didn't give them to society. He didn't give them to a school teacher. He didn't give them to a neighbor or even a grandma. He gave them to you. And I think that's the most important thing. You can always bank on that. God trusted you with these little people.
I have to trust myself.
Uh-huh. That's hard, isn't it? And here's the deal. If you can stand for principle when all the world says, do the social, If you can stand for principle and do what you know is right in God's eyes, just between you and God, like, hey, God says send him to school, okay, I'll do it. Or God says don't, that these particular children, for one reason or another, need to be homeschooled. And you just stand firm and do it. Then you will have power. I am who I am today, partly because I made that choice, to stand for principle. I chose to stand alone, even though people went, you're doing foster care? What are you thinking? I'm thinking I'm standing for the principle that I'm staying home with my kids because they're babies and I want to raise them. You know? That was my principle that I was standing on. And I'm thinking that this is the way. This is what I felt like I needed to do in order to accomplish that goal and maintain that principle. And then when I chose to homeschool my kids, I'm thinking that I felt like this is what my children need. That when I prayed about it, this is what I felt I had to do. I can't let what you think about my family influence me at all. And my father was a school teacher. And he said, what about their social? How are they going to get along in the world? Blah, 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 blah. And now my father has written a book. And the book is for sale on my site. I've even written a part in it that tells what my school day looks like in the back. He's written a book called Educational Success. And in that book, he talks about whether you're homeschooled, whether you're public schooled, private schooled, whatever, what are the keys to educational success. And he does say, and homeschool is a viable option. And you know why he says it now? Because proof is in the pudding. Because he has seen what has happened with my children. He's seen my oldest son, who's 16, attending George Wythe University. He's seen it, and he's gone, yeah, you know what? I was wrong. And he even admits it right in the book. Listen, I got to tell you, there was a time I was against homeschool, but that's an option too. And he brings it right out. So, but no matter where you choose to homeschool or where you choose to school your children, every parent's a homeschooler anyway. That's always been one of my principles. No matter what happens, no matter if my child is at the university, I'm still in charge. I am still the homeschool parent of that child. And the way that we live our family culture and our life and the pattern of discussion and communication and connection that I have with that child is vital to his success, even though he's now at the university. So it's ownership. You have to own your stewardship. And it was bigger. It's obviously turned out to be bigger than you originally thought it was. So I had a couple of other thoughts. I don't know if they need to be shared. Let me just look through them really quick. Well, one thing I thought was, you know, sometimes when you change environments, you can get a little bit of a low self-esteem because you kind of don't know exactly where your place is. And so when a person gets a low self-esteem, sometimes it's because they don't feel like they impress other people enough. They don't feel like they're strong enough because they've seen other people that seem stronger. And they feel anxious. And so they stop communicating effectively because they feel like there's got to be some other way because they've been around people then that don't know how to communicate effectively. It hasn't been part of the deliberate conversation at home. So they become really selfish. And his behavior is obviously, that you've described, very selfish. When he destroyed the house, he was showing you that he felt anxiety. He felt totally disconnected from you at that moment. And he obviously felt misunderstood because he was trying to disagree with you in a passive-aggressive way. There must have been some piece of the situation which happened when you were outside that he felt you didn't understand. Or at the very least, he doesn't know how to accept a consequence or a no answer yet. He doesn't know how to take ownership over his own behaviors yet. These are really vital skills. Have you been doing like the four basic skills and stuff with him? Like, do you do them consistently? Would you say that he's kind of mastered those things, or where's he at?
I haven't. I'm still learning, like, how to teach everything.
Okay.
So we haven't. Gotcha. When you even say that, I'm not even familiar what those things are.
Okay. So you haven't been, like, through, like, the book and, well, you just joined the course.
I don't have a book yet.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
it's on its way
up, like,
to you. You probably
Yeah,
ought
I got
to
the email. It said it's on its way, so.
Yeah, you probably ought to be getting it any time, actually. So, yeah. And that'll be helpful. But even that, just go through the steps. And as you go through the steps, it's like step, you know, 5 or 6 or something. And
yeah.
And you'll learn those skills and you'll teach them to him. And each step corresponds with certain chapters of the book. If you look in the to read section down at the bottom of every to read section, it says chapters, you know, 10, 19, you know, 23 and whatever, and it'll tell you what chapters. So if you want to go and read those chapters at the same time. Anyway, yeah, you know, that's going to make a big difference for you to adopt a structure. It sounds like you're working really hard at trying to be calm and trying
yeah.
to be the kind of parent that's like not losing it. So.
If it makes you feel any better, I did make him clean everything up. So
that's good. That's good. Natural consequences.
Yeah. We did talk about how that was just completely unacceptable. Don't ever do
sure.
that again or I will lose my mind.
Sure. However, do feel lucky that he didn't actually, like, everything that he ruined, he knew was something that could very easily be put back.
Yeah,
he didn't go and bash holes in the walls, which some kids would do.
Well, maybe if he was bigger, he's pretty small still.
Well, that's the thing. So you got to conquer it, right?
Oh, yeah, I worry about yeah. that because these boys yeah. ruffle with each other, you know.
Yeah. Well, and some of that is part of being a boy and being raised a boy. They kind of rough and tumble a little bit. And some of it, I think, is a useful kind of a skill. They need to be aware of strength. And,
yeah,
like, boys especially, yeah,
mm-hmm.
boys especially need to have an awareness of what strength looks like, feels like. They need to get in touch with their own strength, because a guy who never finds his strength is lost for the majority of his life. And he feels like he's not a man that he's supposed to be. And that doesn't mean every guy has to be the strongest guy on the block, but there's something to that for men especially. It's just kind of like, you know, I don't know, the girl who doesn't know how to dress. She just feels somehow so different, and that she
yeah.
doesn't, she's got an image problem, you know. And anyway, but guys have that if they don't find their strength. It's part of who they are to be protectors. So hopefully that helps a lot. It sounds to me like I probably brought up a whole bunch of things that made you go, oh, I didn't directly answer one of your questions, and one of your questions was, should you take him out? If you really feel like, if you really ponder on this, and if I were you, I would sit down in a really quiet place. I know that's hard to say with three little kids, but you sit down in a quiet place with a notebook or a paper and a pencil and a pen or a pen, and just, like, think out loud on paper. Because you read to teach, you write to learn, and you need to know what it is that you need to learn. So get out your journal, whatever it is, and start writing about the situation. Start, and then as you write, you will feel what is right for you, especially if you have prayed prior to doing so.
I know it's right.
Okay.
I do. I know
okay.
what the answer is.
Okay.
And
well, then, if you already
yeah.
know, then just go for it. Then just do whatever
yeah.
the answer is, and then don't look back and don't feel like if the answer is to take him out, don't feel like, oh no, I just put him in. Does taking him out make our family look like a failure or make us look like we can't make up our mind? Who cares? It's your family. It's your child. Just do it. Just
yeah.
whatever, you know. I mean, I think in the end we do way too many things because we think about what other people might think. And will people think we didn't give it enough of a chance? Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Did the Spirit say do a certain thing? Well, then do it. I mean, honestly, I don't wait. You just do it. So anyway, good question, and welcome to the implementation
course. I'm going to mute now.
Okay. All right, we've got another. Now, this one I'm not going to read, but I am just going to tell you. So last week I talked about hitting the wall, and some of you who listened to last week's call, and of course you can always go back and listen to it, but you heard me cry and go on about the wall last week, because that was something that I was experiencing new again. Even though I've experienced it before, every once in a while it catches up with you. And so I got a touching letter about a woman who said, you know, I've hit a major wall. And she explained her wall, and really she has had quite a journey, you know, in her life. A lot of things unexplained. It was very touching. She talked about how inspired she was by the idea of the wall, and how she, you know, struggled so many years with eating disorders, family disappointments, and feelings of frustration. But after recognizing that she could be grateful, that she could change her perspective, she realized that changing that focus could help her on her own self-government track. That she never really recognized how much work she needed to do for herself. And it's so true. We can easily be distracted by problems, worries, anxieties, comparisons. They stop our progress because we dwell on them and allow them to take over our progress. We are meant to move forward. Our existence is proof that we must learn, grow, and become. And we get to choose who and what we want to become. We really do hold all of the cards. So often we think that we were victims of circumstance. And so long as we think that, as this wonderful lady found out, so long as we think that, we have hit a wall. And it's very hard for us to be grateful and to have the right perspective about our roles and our role in our family, in the lives of other people. Wow. So thank you for sharing with me how you became free. Because that is what truth is for, is to keep us all free. And when we start looking at how we can change ourselves and focusing on true principles, then we become different people. We become liberated, more passionate, more purpose-driven. We accomplish great things. And so it's very exciting. Okay. I'm going to move on here to the next question. Let's see. How can a mom following TJ Ed, so I have apparently a lot of people on the call who do TJ Ed, which makes sense because I always speak at that conference and I know they're, and because I do TJ Ed too. And TJ Ed is nothing more than an educational philosophy. It is not a curriculum. It is a way of looking at education, the phases of learning, and an educational journey. It says, how can a mom following TJ Ed know what to do? If they are upset with math, and I'm guessing this is because I wrote an article about math this last week for the blog, is it because the child does not want to study that at a young age? Do we continue requiring that of them? I have a son who is now 12 and can't focus on math. I have fought him for 2 years over it. I now am following TJ Ed and letting him choose the classes and the books. Reading this, I guess, meaning my math thing, makes me wonder about making school assignments or not. How do you handle assignments and requirements? First off, people misunderstand TJ Ed. And I'm not going to just say TJ Ed because people are like, what? Thomas Jefferson education model. Okay, there's a book, and there's actually multiple books to help people learn how to do this particular model of education. There's a book called A Thomas Jefferson Education, written by a man named Dr. Oliver DeMille. Dr. DeMille is quite cutting edge in his thinking. He had incredible mentors, one of them who has been a fantastic voice for freedom in our country, named Cleon Skousen, and he really has been on this journey for a number of years now to try to help keep the country free, meaning preserving education. Because if a people cannot be educated, they cannot be free. And he's done a tremendous job at it, and many people who have chosen to find an interest in education have found his works and have realized, wow, I want to do this for my family in my home or in my school. My dad loves TJ Ed, and he was a school teacher. He applied the principles in his classroom. So TJ Ed is not so much about a child-led education as it is about a child-focused education. And I spent some time, I'm not going to revisit this too much because I spent some time talking about the difference between child-led and child-focused education just a couple of conference calls ago. So you could go back and you could listen to that so that I'm not repetitive to everybody that was on, you know, those calls. So this means that sometimes for their proper development, they have requirements. Now, I know that one of Dr. DeMille's principles is inspire, not require. But he does also say that there is a point in every child's life when a requirement is an inspiration, like, to them. Like, it actually inspires them to do something they wouldn't normally do. And this is totally true. So, for instance, my children are part of a writing group. My two little ones, my 10 and 8-year-old, are part of a writing club. We're also part of a Spanish club. And for these classes, as well as for their Liberty Girls type classes and Knights of Freedom classes, they have projects that are due. So they have to have books read by a certain time. They have to have papers read by the time they go to their writing workshops. They have to have presentations ready for their Spanish club. They have these different things that they have to accomplish. These are requirements. And they inspire them to do all kinds of things, all kinds of study and research and everything, because they know that they've got a date something has to be done by. If there are no dates for anything to be done by, then a child, number one, misses out on the opportunity to see what they truly can accomplish and to push themselves a little bit further. They just stay in the play zone. They stay in core phase for a really long time. There are different phases of learning. Core phase is the first, and then love of learning, and then scholar phase. Actually, there's other phases too, but those are the ones that happen generally in the home. And they'll stay in that little play phase for a really long time if there aren't any if you don't schedule your time properly, and if you don't meet and discuss each week in your mentor sessions, and I go over this in the book and in the course, daily mentor sessions, weekly mentor sessions, how you work with the child to keep them having objectives. So call them objectives, if you will, but what he means is that a child isn't required. When he talks about inspire, not require, at least this is how I take it. I shouldn't probably put words in his mouth. That wouldn't be very fair. But how I take it is that the child is not required to keep up with where everybody else is, because maybe they're not there yet in some areas. Maybe they need to have an extra few weeks on decimals and fractions, where the kids at the school have no choice but to move on, whether they understood it or not. But my child's going to know it. When we do it, we're not going to have to come back and teach it again, because we're going to make sure they know. That is part of inspire, not require. When does it get deep into the child? When does the learning go through them instead of them just going through the learning? And to me, that's really the emphasis behind inspire, not require. Also, if you're requiring in a way that creates a big power struggle in your family, then your child's in core phase and needs to do a lot of work. And you need to not be, you know, getting to that level. Also, probably your tone paradigm and the way that you set the example for education could probably change for all of us. They usually can always be adjusted. So anyway, I got off the beaten track here. Let me see where I was. Okay, so they do have to have a little bit of requirement in their life. I mean, you require them to do chores every day, right? I hope so, because if not, they won't learn life skills. Anyway, so these requirements, though, have to be given with an attitude of relationship building and with love. My children actually see the value in math and do it because they don't want to have to play catch-up later. They saw their older brother, who now is in college, have to go through 3 math books in a year to get ready to take the ACT test. They don't want to do that. My kids looked at that and said, I mean, he did it just fine. Why did he do it? Well, because you can learn everything K through 12 in 4 years. And you can learn, you can become, if you're an adult and you're totally illiterate, if you love to learn, you can become literate in 80 hours. 80 hours, that's 2 weeks of regular work. That's just not that much. And so, I mean, it can be done. My son proved it with the math. He was way ahead in everything else. And in the math, he had kind of slacked off a few years. You know, well, I shouldn't say a few years, but here and there, which dropped him a few years behind where he probably should be to take his ACT test. And so he just did 3 math books in a year. My kids saw him go through math, math, math crazy, and they're like, why would you? I'm just going to keep going at this. So anyway, but they love it, actually. On the day of the article that I recently wrote, Porter was just overwhelmed by a different concept. He didn't hate math entirely. And I would never teach him to quit because I'm super passionate about raising a different kind of a person, a leader kind of a person, and a leader can't quit. And that was one of the points of the articles, as well as showing that connecting with the child and refocusing are beneficial to relieving stress. If I had a 12-year-old who didn't want to do math, I would start making goals for the future. I would start discussing adult things like college and occupations in detail and determine what he feels really passionate about, even if it could change later. Determine it for now and just get going. Does he want to be a pilot? Does he know he could be a pilot when he's 15 or 16? I mean, then just do it. You know, let's work toward getting his pilot's license. You know, he can fly little Cessnas around. You guys can go on trips. It'll be fun. Anyway, I would really feed whatever it is that he feels like he has to go toward for a while. Get him significantly invested in a dream. And then I would talk about, okay, well, what skill development do you need? Let's make some skill development goals. Or a different approach that you could take if your 12-year-old did not like math is to schedule math time every day for 20 minutes at first. You just say, okay, we're going to have 20 minutes. And I would do it before he does any other studies, because if you do math early in the morning, it's not as bad. For some reason, it's just not. Part of the reason that people don't like math is because they put it down for too long, and then they don't want to get back to it and learn it. So I would say, okay, let's do 20 minutes and every single day, and let's just do it every day right after breakfast. I mean, you could even do it before you had your daily, you know, devotional time. Make the math experience less stressful by discussing it as he goes along, even though he's 12. It doesn't matter. The point isn't that he did it completely independently the whole way. The point is that he understands the concepts and that he's learned from the concepts. Over time, he will learn to teach himself as you work through the book with him time and time again. As he gets older, there's things that you can bring in mentors. I don't know anybody that can get to high-level math without having some sort of a mentor. whether it's a program or a person. We use Saxon Math, and there are these books called, DVDs called Dive, D-I-V-E, and they are tutors for every lesson in the Saxon books. So when they get to a point that I don't want to have to go back and relearn, then we bring out the Dive CDs, and they just self-teach themselves. Of course, my kids self-teach themselves pretty much mostly along the way anyway. They read the lessons, they take care of it, because they have total confidence in their abilities. Okay, so hopefully that helps, you know, on that topic about the math anyway. So another homeschool question, you know, Misty, this is from you again, but I don't think I really need to answer it. Are you good? I'm guessing. I don't know if you're still there. I'm not going to answer it. If you need it, let me know. But it's just, oh, I don't know. Maybe I should. It's a little bit different than we've had so far. Okay. I'll just give a couple of tips here. So it says, could you also give some advice or support on the whole homeschooling topic? I just recently put my two boys in public school for the first time. We started with the TGIAD model. I got scared thinking they would be behind the rest of the world. My 7-year-old is away from home for over 6 hours a day, sometimes more, and it feels wrong. Our homeschool community is so small, and they have few friends in which they can connect with. Please help. It's most important that they connect with family. We talked about that already. The fact that you said it feels wrong, well, there you go. It feels wrong. So just that feeling, and I think you've already handled that. We talked already about how they can learn K through 12 in 4 years if they need to. Like, this has been studied. It's been proven. The word behind is really interesting. That word got me thinking as I thought about it. I thought behind, I don't want them to be behind. Well, the word behind means in back of, which suggests somehow losing in a race or something like that. It's very interesting to me that this new program that our president has put forth is called Race to the Top. As if there is some sort of, you know, person who comes out, you know, some better kind of, you know, winner or something when it comes to education. Education, there's never an end. There's not a finish line, you know. And so I think that that's really funny that there's this image that there's somehow a finish line in education, because it's just not true. Anyway, but let's talk about this word behind just a little bit. Is a child really losing if they go at a pace where they understand all the content and immerse in it and master it and don't have to ever review it again? Is that really behind? Because how often do the kids at school review? Every year, the first half of the year, they duplicate what they did the year before and the last half of the year. So they do it twice. They have to. And then the last half of the year, they're going to do it. I mean, you could technically go to school for half of a year, and so long as you really got it, you would never have to go back. I mean, you just be like, okay, I'm always missing the first half of the year. I'm just going to come on the last half of the year. I mean, you could kind of do that in a lot of ways. I can't help but think of my son and his love for castles and knights. We had medieval feasts. We made weaponry. We learned the knight's code of conduct. We studied and made various types of castle diagrams and models. We read books about knights, like real classics like Door in the Wall and Adam of the Road. We made battle scenes and learned how to cook authentic medieval foods. We figured out how many chains there were in a piece of chainmail armor, you know, and how many times a sword needed to be burned in order to be strong enough to last, and what's the symbolism behind that, and, you know, and at the end of the day, was my son behind or ahead of the other children he knew? Well, it's all how you look at it. I mean, education's a pretty big picture, you know. I think they want us to think that it's not, that it's an assembly line, but it's a really big picture, and so he was ahead of everybody his age on medieval study. totally ahead. The study of knights, the study of weaponry, all of that stuff, they can't touch it. They might know there's something called a knight and know there's something called a sword, but my son knew what really made that stuff. What metal do they use to make a sword? Why? Why that metal combination? You know? How does it make it stronger? I mean, really, it was a deep, deep learning through this time. Now, at the time, was he as dedicated? I'm talking about my 16-year-old here that's now at the university. At that time, was he as dedicated to fractions? Probably not when we were studying all that. You know, he was probably 8, and he probably wasn't as in love with math at the time. Of course, actually, he always did like math. He just sort of stopped doing it for a while because he got so into books. But, you know, so he might have been technically behind a conveyor belt on one thing. Maybe he didn't learn about pollution, you know, that month. But who cares? He knew something nobody else his age knew. And so that puts him ahead. So to me, I look at it as a huge big picture. And I know that even when they leave my home, I will not have had the opportunity to tell them everything I wanted to study every topic with them in the detail I hoped for. I know that. And I just accept it. And that's just how it is. Okay, we have another question here. How am I doing on time? I'm doing pretty good. Hopefully I'm hitting everything as well as I need to be. This question says, can you give me a quick script for when I walk into my 16-year-old son's bedroom at the end of our science hour and he has not yet done any science but has drawn an elaborate picture? Specifically, on the day when the schedule does not allow for it to become homework, he has no learning disabilities. Thank you.
Nicolene?
Uh-huh.
That was my question. I was just wondering if I could modify that for a quick answer. And my question is more, I'm in step one, first week, and I'm wondering if you feel that those sort of power struggles will work themselves out as the 10 weeks progress, and I'm more focused on teaching self-government without giving all the history, just enough to say in our family there's been a lot of very life-changing events in the last 6 years that don't normally happen in a homeschool family.
Okay.
But in your opinion, over the next 10 weeks, are those the sort of power struggles that will work themselves out as we go through self-government?
Yes, yes. As you go through the course, you are going to... Well, you're going to change. I mean, there's going to be assignments that are every week, and I hope you all are very diligent about doing them. I hope you don't go, oh, yeah, well, I get the idea of that assignment. Okay, well, yeah, I should praise more. No, really do keep a thing in your pocket and record how many times you pray. Or not pray, praise. Hopefully you got the praying part down. Anyway, but, you know, really do the assignments so that you can feel like you've put everything into it and that you can change yourself. And as you change, you betcha, you're going to have less power struggles. You're going to be basing your interactions on principles. The family's going to feel like they stretched a little bit, and it may even be a little bit uncomfortable at times, especially because they're probably in a habit of relating to you in a certain way, in a little bit more stressed, selfish, anxious kind of a way. I had a whole bunch of questions, you know, and as I read that, I was like, well, I wish I could answer that really quick. The quick teaching self-government answer, if I wanted to just give you this really quick answer, I would say, let's say his name's Kevin. I would go into his room and say, Kevin, I gave you an instruction an hour ago to go into your room and do your science work. You looked at me and kept a calm voice, face, and body, and you said, okay, but you didn't actually do the task. I see that you have, you know, allowed yourself to become distracted. What you should have done was you should have stayed on task, and this is how you stay on task. And, you know, you need to be in a place where there is nothing else around you that's going to divert your attention, maybe at the kitchen table instead of in his bedroom. You need to be able to, you know, you need to have a schedule of things that you look at. You need to have some certain objectives or questions that you want to have answered with your study. At the beginning of your study, if you're studying about, you know, atoms, then you ask yourself a few questions about atoms and you find those questions as you go along with your study or whatever it happens to be. But you help him find ways and make a plan for how do I keep myself on task when this doesn't interest me right now. And then I would tell him, you know, because you chose not to stay on task today, not to follow instructions, then you've earned an extra chore. He is, I don't know, you know, we've been talking a lot about people who follow the Thomas Jefferson education model. In that model, if a person is doing what he's doing, then he's probably in core phase and he's not in scholar phase. So at age 16, you're saying, okay, it's science time, go and do science. And he's drawing a picture instead. He's not able to keep himself focused. Then he probably hasn't completely invested in study yet. He may not be quite a scholar yet, even at age 16. There's a couple of things that you can do about that. First off, if he's really not going to be studying, then you say, hey, listen, you know, if you don't want to do your studies, you can have a core phase day. I've got lots of weeding that needs to be done. I've got, you know, whatever that has to happen, and you can always take a break if you feel like your brain's shutting down or whatever it is, and we can do some core phase stuff. Now, of course, you don't have to call it that, but it is really helpful if the kids understand the phases of education. If he knew there was a core phase, a level of learning phase, and a scholar phase, and a depth phase, and a mission phase, then he would be able to go, okay. And then you asked him periodically. A couple of times a year, you have a little assessment meeting as one of your mentor sessions, which is one of the things you're going to learn on the course, how I do those. And you would say, okay, where do you see yourself at right now? You know, remember, this is what love of learning looks like. This is what whatever looks like. And this is where you want to go. You know, what is your goal? Your goal is you want to, you know.
Have
you
fun.
He wants to have fun. That's his goal.
100% motivated by having fun. And that's the only thing that motivates. No love of learning right now. At all.
Oh, he's still in core phase.
Way. Yes, definitely.
Okay. So,
and getting out of that has been the challenge. The two older siblings are completely scholars. This one,
uh-huh.
Not at all.
Okay, so does he have too much peer time? Or
no.
Does he have too many electronics?
No. Yes.
Okay, those got to go. They got to go because they're not helping him. They're making him selfish. If his goal
I agree.
If at age 16,
I agree, but my husband doesn't.
Oh, I
so,
see.
Yeah, Dad's a TV guy.
I see. So that is a very difficult thing. But Dad's not home all day, right? Like, Dad's not watching TV in the middle of the day. So
sometimes, yeah, he works from home.
Oh.
I told him it's complicated.
Yeah, that is complicated. Libraries are beautiful things.
Yeah,
go to the library. I mean, there's other distractions there, but I would go to the library, get him a set of those big earmuffs that people wear when they go shooting guns at a range.
We
put
have
him on
those.
His... What's that?
We have those, so that's good.
Yeah, stick him on his head. He needs quiet, right, so that he can be alone with his own thoughts, you know, because so many kids, they're used to not even having quiet, so it's like, well, I got to study with my earbuds in. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes it so you can't think. How are you going to engage in great thought when you have something stimulating your brain? You can't. The brain must be quiet. It must
exactly
be still.
Exactly. Unitasking is something that I'm having to teach them instead of, you know, the opposite of multitasking. So that's where we are. So I'm going to study the Thomas Jefferson information.
Yeah, definitely do, because core phases, that's what, like, he learns right and wrong and good and bad and true and false. And he doesn't even get true and false, because if he understood true, then he would understand what his role is right now at this time. I think he needs more, Now, obviously, Dad's example is going to be big for him, because Dad's going to show him what Dad does with his life is going to show your son what it means to live a successful life. So that's, by the time a child hits age 12, they look to their father for what it means to be successful. So my thought is, if father doesn't completely get his role, and I'm not saying I know he does or doesn't, because I'm not there, but it sounds to me like that could be an issue. If father doesn't completely get his role as a father and what that actually means, and how the children see that and relate to it and everything, and what they think about their own lives because of it, then it's going to be a really good idea for you to pray about finding a mentor for your son that can teach him that, and that you read books, or that he reads books that are really heavy in that. So, like, read Little Britches by Ralph Moody. Has he read that one before?
No, actually, we read a lot of G.A. Henty books.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with G.A. Henty.
I haven't. I'm like, I am not familiar with it.
Very, you know, heroic people that, you know, it's historical fiction. He was the boys historian in Great Britain quite a long time.
Well, there's also, like, Horatio Hornblower, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's
and
read
some
that.
Some of these guys that are like the Virginian, you know? I mean, there are some of these books that are like, this is what it really means to be a man. Not like one of the founding fathers kind of men, but like just a real guy. Like, this is what it means. Like, guys, they, like, work hard. They live with purpose. They sacrifice lots. Like, that is what they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's equivalent of a girl needing to read, like, Little House on the Prairie at some point. You got to read it because look at Ma, you know? Look what she does. Look at her life. You got to get that. Otherwise, you'll never be happy being a woman and a mother, right? So anyway, I think he's lacking in vision. And so there are a couple of books that, first off, I don't think he should study in his room. I don't know how you feel about that, but if his room is a distracting place for him, if he goes in there and does things that are anti-study, like listening to music and whatever, then maybe he needs to, like, you need to have the somewhere else. You know, you set up a desk in another room or a kitchen table somewhere, or this chair, this cushy chair, that's your study chair. And see, this crate beside it, this crate of books is all the things you can use during study time. So here's a whole bunch of books that you need to read. Here's your math book and your science book and, you know, whatever else you're using. If you're going to read A Thomas Jefferson Education by Oliver DeMille, you absolutely must get the audio called The Seven Keys to Great Teaching. And you can get it at, TJ Ed Online. TJ Ed Online, I think. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of downloads, and I highly recommend those classes. Highly.
We normally study at the dining room table. That's how we've always done it. It's just, I have this idea that at some point they should be a little more independent, and that's just not happening. We're not moving out of this phase at all.
Well, and actually, you're right. You are right. My son sits in the Lazy Boy down in the basement. Now he's 16 and he's going to the university, and he has so many studies. I mean, he's reading Nicomachus and the Federalist Papers and all these things, you know, every day, and he's diagramming documents and whatever, and, you know, and he's sitting down there, and he'll study for, I mean, he wakes up at 6 a.m., he studies for 2 hours, then he leaves at 8 a.m. after family prayer and stuff, and he usually studies the scriptures for, like, 2 hours is mostly what he studies in the morning. So he studies scriptures for 2 hours, then we have family scripture and prayer, then at 8 o'clock, he leaves and he drives an hour to Salt Lake and he goes to school until 12. Then he gets back around 1, he eats some food, he stays in the basement until about 7 o'clock at night. And he stays in the Lazy Boy with his books by the side of him and his notebooks and his whatever. And he'll come up once in a while to go outside to shoot a few hoops to kind of, you know, shake off the seat rot that he's getting from sitting in the chair. And then he'll go back down there and he'll do it again. That's what it looks like to be a scholar. So, and I don't even tell him what to do. Like, when he has free time, he comes up to me and says, Mom, I want to put in 2 hours of work today. Do you need anything that needs to be clipped? Can I help you with whatever? Do I need to do shipping? Blah, 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 blah. Because he's the shipping department. Your son is not at that point yet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because he hasn't taken any ownership. He's still doing studies because he has to make you happy.
Exactly.
And so that's why he needs to know the phases of learning. And he also, there's other audios that he could listen to, so many by some of these great people who understand these leadership principles. But there's one called The Depth Phase that talks about finding your mission in life and what it really means. Wow, you should get that. It's another Oliver DeMille audio class. I heard it live. It was incredible. Honestly changed my life. You will see a few of the ideas in the book, in my book, that I share from that class. Because
I did read the book over the summer.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are some awesome things, and I would recommend it. There are a couple of books your son really truly should read, especially after he is aware of what all of the phases of learning look like and what he needs to do and to accomplish his goals. TJ Ed for Teens is a really great book. That is a book that, and one of my favorite parts of the book, there's lots of wonderful things in it, but one of my favorite parts of the book of TJ Ed for Teens is that it says, in order to get through a scholar phase, you have to do 5,000 hours of study. And then we sat down and went, okay, what does that look like? What does real study look like, number one? And we sat down and looked at that. You know, when it came out, he was maybe 13 or 14 when that came out, that book. And I think he was 13. And we said, where are you at in your 5,000 hours? And he said, oh, I'm about here. And I said, okay, well, you know, what are your goals? Let's talk about your goals. And he said, Mom, I want to go to, I've always, but since the time I was about 10 years old, maybe even younger, I've wanted to go to George Wythe by the time I'm 16. He's like, I don't want to waste a whole bunch of time on college later. And I said, okay, well, if you're going to go to college when you're 16 and you're 13 now, how many more hours of school do you need? What does that need to look like? How are you going to schedule it? How are we going to keep track of it? And we started keeping track of hours. He had an end goal that he was working toward, and he just kept track of it and did everything he could to meet all those goals. And we backstepped it and put other things in there. You know, you got to take that ACT. You know, we've got to, you know, whatever it is, you got to get through X amount of math books or you're not going to score decent, you know, and all of these other things that we, you know, determined you're going to need money because blah, blah, you know. And so then he changed his life. And he occasionally would fall off the wagon just a little bit. But we always had our weekly mentor meetings, so we'd pull him right back on track and remind him of his goals, and he'd be inspired again. My thought is that your guy needs to completely detox from distractions. Electronic devices offer a wonderful illusion that life isn't completely real.
Yes.
And so you don't have to take
any responsibility. If I had my brothers, we would have no electronics in the house if I had my choice.
So yeah, right.
I agree. The implementation of removing electronics from a home by Silicon Valley computer geek husband is a huge challenge for me in inspiring this child in particular who says, I don't know, just tell me what to do. Goals for life, I don't know. What do you want to do when you grow up? I don't know.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing is that when you sit down to discuss that, you're somewhere else. You're not at home around the kitchen table anymore. You're sitting in a car up in a mountain road, just sitting there.
Mm. Okay.
And you say, you don't know? Let's pray about it. Let's pray about what you're supposed to know right now. We can't keep going like this. And I'm not leaving this mountain until we have a plan. We can't. This is our retreat. You bring a nice lunch, and you sit there, and you think, and you talk, and you know what? It hurts him a little bit. It hurts. Because it feels like you're putting his head in a vise. Because,
yep.
What? I have to make plans, because as soon as you make plans, then you feel just a wee teeny bit accountable. And nobody wants that, right? So that's what I would do. I also would say to the husband, I would say, I've noticed that the signs of having an addiction are being preoccupied with something, being not motivated to have purpose, and being disconnected from family members, not having a drive. Our son has all of these signs. So don't talk about the husband and whatever's going on with him. Just say, mm-hmm. Our son has all of these signs. He has an addiction problem with media, with music, with video games, with TV. He's got an addiction. So I've thought of two options of how we can help him with the addiction, because it's stopping his progress. He is not going to turn out. He will be laying around our house, hoping that we make his life into something if we don't give him the tools he needs and free him from this addiction. So then you say, so we have two choices. Either, A, we remove all electronics from the entire family, except for what you need, honey, for work, because I know you've got to work. But that can be done in another room, or that doesn't have to affect him. So we remove everything. He doesn't have a cell phone. He doesn't have whatever it is. We've got to remove all that to free him. That's number one. Or number two, which isn't as effective, but is the other option, is as a family, we start going through addiction recovery. There are various kinds of addiction recovery programs. Churches have addiction recovery programs. There's like, you know, AA type programs. You can find the steps, whatever. But you say, we're going to have to start going through an addiction recovery program if we don't just remove the problem. And to me, those are really your only choices. Either that, or you just go, oh, well, he's lost. Is that really an option? I doubt it. I doubt your husband would think it's an option.
Or wouldn't agree that there was an addiction problem. I think that might be where I am on that one.
Yeah, well, and maybe, you know, maybe, I mean, you're going to probably have to pray for softened hearts there and understanding and everything else. I don't know if you're a praying kind of a lady, but I am, as obviously.
Constantly.
Okay. I don't know how you can be a mom and not, honestly.
I don't understand. I don't understand how non-believers get through parenthood. I don't. I couldn't
do
it.
No, I'm the same. So it's the hardest thing we do. So, but I would definitely bring up those ideas. If you feel like there's no way he would be on board, that he would be taking it as a personal attack, you know, that your husband would, I would bring it up at the very least to the son and say, I'm giving you a no answer. You can't play whatever games. You can't watch whatever because you have an addiction. This is what an addiction looks like. And you explain the symptoms of an addiction. Honey, you have this. And you explain this when you're not home, okay? You're up in the mountains. You're talking about this at a different location where no one can bother you. And you say, I want you to be free. In fact, at the very beginning of the conversation, I would probably say, honey, I want you to have more freedom. I feel like you want more freedom too. Right now, we are in so much bondage. Let me show you what the bondage looks like. The bondage looks like every day we think about, oh, I want to play a game. Oh, I want to be entertained. That is bondage, honey. That is you not being able to control your own destiny. Something is controlling you. And we've got to get you free, because you will not be happy. Your wife will not be happy one day. In fact, you'll have a hard time finding a really good one if you're not able to give her the attention she desires because of other things that have you bound. Plus, it leads to so many other things, pornography, whatever. I mean, That's just a,
we've actually already struggled with that.
Okay. So there's another kind of bondage, right, that the family would then maybe understand. But that is something that, you know, is very real. And I would just bring it up to him and say, we've got to make a plan. I'm going to tell you no sometimes, that even if somebody else is doing something, brothers, sisters, dad, you can't, because you've got to make a clean break. Not until you are focused on actually controlling yourself, making your own happiness. And that would look like your studies are looking good, your relationships with the family are good and connected. You're not thinking about the latest YouTube video or media. You're not thinking about whatever. Those aren't things that preoccupy your brain. But you are completely free and thinking and becoming the leader you're meant to be, kind of a thing. Then, so you say, you know, until you're to that point, I really think we got to get rid of a few things. And then you just make a plan and you just do it and say, even if other people aren't, you're going to have to be. And then what I would do is I'd probably talk to the husband first and say, you know, he's got an addiction. This is what we need to do. Or this is what I think we need to do. Or actually you just say he has an addiction. I know it because, you know, this is what addictions look like. What are we going to do? See what dad says. And if you say no, and if he doesn't think there's a problem, then you say no, I know there's a problem. In fact, I think we only have two choices, and I think we need to take everything away. So here's the deal: I need the whole family to support us helping him with his addiction, and I'm going to go and talk to him about it. We're going to make a plan, and so that you're not doing anything behind dad's back, I think you need to probably tell him, and then say, okay, I'm going to go talk to him and we're going to make a plan, because he is in bondage to this stuff and he doesn't even know it. And then say, so I really would love your support, so if he's in the room or the area, you know, we can turn stuff off or whatever, because he's just not able to control himself. And you can use school as an example. He can't even study. He doesn't, you know. And say, you know, there's other kids that are in his same age, and they, like, totally get it, and their lives look like this, you know. But he's not getting it. He thinks fun is the goal, and it's not. And, you know, I think when you level with your husband in a way where you're choosing not to judge him in any way, but you're just coming to him as, listen, we're both advocates for this child because he's ours, and there's a problem, and we got to do something. And you come to him in that way, then his heart could be opened. I mean, obviously, pray for the husband's heart to be open too. But yeah. And then just follow through. Really, that is what I would do. It's going to take deliberate action. There's no amount of wishing and hoping that's going to make it better.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with deliberate action, that's for sure. You were mentioning doing all the homework and everything, and so I'm one of those people that I'm going through every single video, and I'll read all the chapters, and, you know, I don't have a problem with that, but we didn't have television growing up, so my dad taught me to be a scholar, so, but I am.
Well, you weren't distracted, so.
At all.
Yeah, so that makes a big difference. I remember being just extremely dedicated to school, even though, you know, I obviously went to public school. I mean, my dad was a public school teacher, but I was extremely dedicated to school because I was extremely dedicated to being the best, like the smartest in my class, the smartest in my family or whatever. Plus, I really loved learning, but I hated the school experience. And there were times where I got distracted by TV and whatever because my family liked TV. And I had to try and be able to be distracted with the family, and then I'd kill myself and stay up way, 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 way too late to try and get all the schoolwork done because I still wouldn't let go of the other goal, which, you know, proved to be for the best for me, but at the same time wasn't a healthy combination for my health, you know. I was often extremely overtired and probably irritable and stuff because of it. So, We paid a price, you know, and distraction is a real thing. I know what it feels like. I've had it happen in my own life. And there's way too many distractions nowadays. It sounds like you know what you need to do, but you do have a wall there because the husband doesn't feel the exact same way, possibly. I think you have to always give him, assume that he loves the family as much as you do, though. Just make that a given always. Even though he may see the world differently with a different set of lenses, I would say, but assume he loves the family, assumes he wants the children to succeed, to be the best that they can be, just like you do. And I would come to this particular issue on that common ground and say, listen, I'm seeking your counsel here. What are we going to do about this? As long as he's got this stuff around, it's like he can't function. And I don't want him to always have to need someone to tell him what to do. He's got to be able to grow up. And your husband wants that too, I'm sure. So, anyway, and then present your idea after you've sought for his counsel. That's what I would do. See how it goes.
Perfect.
Yep, and worst case scenario, at the end of the day, as you go through all of the steps in the program, you will learn a lot of the language of self-government and teaching the skills of self-government. I don't know whether your husband will be on board or not, but it would probably not. So you're going
to read
the
book together, and then he was like, whatever. So I know that this is going to be just kind of my changing my part of the atmosphere in the home.
Yep, it's going to be your journey, and that's okay. Sometimes when one person takes a journey, it ends up dividing people a little bit. Please try to stop that from happening. He might choose to feel divided from you because you're on a journey and you're helping the children implement skills that he doesn't want to bother with or whatever. He could choose to be divided, but don't you choose to be divided. It's very important that even because when one person changes, when one person grows, when one person finds more truth, you always leave another person behind, which means that you could have distance in your relationship, and that won't help you to have distance. However, you can't stop your progression or stop focusing on true principles just because one person doesn't agree. I mean, it's like the spiritual journey. You know, if somebody said, stop reading your Bible, well, you wouldn't do that, right? I mean, you'd just be like, nice suggestion, but sorry, this is about me and God here, right? And so it's the same thing with your family and with your stewardship. This is about what you think is best for your relationship with your children. So don't take it personally that he doesn't join. He will, to some degree, as you move on. And your reasoning for doing all of this is so that you can have a better relationship with your children so that you can be more kind and not have to micromanage their lives as much, and so that you can, so that they can have more freedom and happiness, you know? It doesn't have anything to do with him unless he wants it to. And he's always welcome but never required. And that's the way you're going to have to keep it until he chooses to jump on himself, and don't let it be a distance thing for you. You absolutely must continue to pray to love him no matter what, despite it. Because if that relationship becomes too distant or too strained, then it will infiltrate your other relationships. It will make problems for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, well, that's a long answer to a short question, but I told you there was, I'm like, how do you answer this one short? Anyway, I do have other questions I didn't get to. I'm so sorry about that. I think I have two questions that I didn't get to. My apologies. I will answer them first thing on next week's call. Hopefully still, though, even though I didn't get to your question, hopefully you still got something out of the questions that I did answer today on the call, because I feel like they were really great questions and pertinent for all of us to be reminded of. So we will start with those other questions next week. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you later.